Well, welcome back to Corinth in Your Car, episode 43, something like that, 40-something. We're all here.
Yeah, I'm crisis.
I'm Josh. Luke is here. Adam is here. And we're excited for another week. Kind of back to normal. Last week, Adam drove solo. So we're...
Did 90 minutes on Tom Bombadil.
Nice.
I don't know.
It's actually 15 minutes on Zacchaeus. But, yeah. You know, maybe they both sing. I don't know. So anyway, we're all back. We're all excited to be here. And I think we got a little bit of checking in to do since it's been a few weeks. So guys, how have the past 2 weeks been? Maybe the best meal you've eaten this past week, and give us a little move update as well, Luke.
Okay, so that's going to be a lot to
You can go quickly.
But that's okay. I'll start with the meal. Tristan and I totally are taking advantage of a deal right now and on one of those meal subscriptions.
Nice.
So there was like this every plate, I think, is what we had.
Okay.
And it was like I got six dinners. Two servings per dinner. I got six of them for like $32.
Yep.
And then immediately canceled the subscription. Yeah. So that it
we do every plate.
Yeah.
We do it.
You do every plate, just normal. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty good.
It is
not bad. So we've cooked.
Is that like HelloFresh? Like
it's similar. Yeah. Yeah.
Are they part of HelloFresh or no?
I don't know officially because the recipes, I've done HelloFresh as well. And so the recipes are very similar. The difference between HelloFresh and EveryPlate, if anybody wants to know, is that EveryPlate sends everything in one box.
Uh-huh. Yep. We got it in one box.
But what HelloFresh does is it sends everything in one box, but it will bag everything per meal.
Ooh.
And so it's a little bit more organized, but I don't know that it's worth the extra
$30. No, it took me 10 minutes to organize everything. So, we've cooked three of our meals so far.
Which ones have you done?
The best one was, I think, the pork flautas.
Hey, I did those. We did those this week.
Those were really good. We enjoyed those. We did one of the like cavatappi pastas. That was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let's see, what did we do last night? We did like a zucchini pizza last night.
Okay. Do you like Asian flavored things?
Yeah, I do.
So the sweet chili pork bowls.
Good.
On point.
Yeah.
Anything sweet chili.
Yeah. Then there's also one that's sometimes it comes up. It's like a Korean barbecue taco.
Nice.
Those are fantastic.
Sweet. So there we go. We're looking forward to, we got three more meals and then no more because we canceled the subscription. But things are well right now. Tristan and I also are at the gym these days. Well, 2 days in a row. So I'm feeling a little sore. Got some cardio in on the treadmill.
Well, what's good is you started in July.
Machines.
So most people start in January, but you started in July. So
yeah, I mean, for us, the busy and hustle of the summer has started to slow down. So because I'm too, done with Mix, done with Move, we're not really planning on going out anywhere anymore. And so we figured it was about time to start a new rhythm and get a little bit more healthy. And so
which gym?
We're on the Monroe Planet Fitness bandwagon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Planet Fitness.
So, we were there yesterday morning.
I mean, it's hard. It's hard not to when it's not really that expensive.
It's not that expensive.
Isn't that,
and it's like 10 minutes away.
Isn't that the one that's like no lug heads allowed and it's got like the alarm that'll go off if you're lifting too heavy?
It says that.
Something like
I've never seen it go off.
Yeah, I've never seen that happen.
It's kind of funny though, because it says, defines a lug head, and he might be wearing a weightlifting tank top and slamming weights around or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 I want to see that happen. That would be hilarious.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't.
I know it will not be me.
I don't do that, but I would rather go to a gym where guys are doing that.
Just motivation.
Now, I'm not one of them, but there are some guys there that could do that. There are some
100%.
Big boys there, man.
I saw a couple of guys there this morning that were doing things that even whenever I was in the best shape of my life in high school that I would have never been able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, what?
They were only using one arm.
Well, there was one guy who was like, I don't even know how to describe what he was doing, but it was an ab workout where he like, kind of like locked himself in to something and he was like hanging over the side of a bench, and he was just going up and down with his body, just complete hip movement. Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. No way. No way in a million years.
Sure you could.
Nope.
You can do anything you set your mind to, Luke.
I cannot do that, regardless of whether I set my mind to it or not. But that's kind of what's going on in Tristan and I's world. We are enjoying three more cheap every plate meals before going back to the grocery store, and
all right,
we're at the gym. So
you may find yourself saying we could actually save money.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, with two people, it's a little different. We're in the family game with five of us.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
So one of the things that is advantageous as far as like the being healthy thing with every plate is some of the meals are kind of high calorie, but you can kind of choose the lower calorie ones. But for me, it's portion control.
Yeah.
So like I could eat healthy, but I could eat a lot of healthy and then not be healthy. Yeah. So it's nice to have the set. Hey, this is your serving, mm-hmm. and that's what you eat. And so it'll be nice. For Move, we'll get to that now.
Quick update.
So Move was great. Really, really fantastic. And really Move and Mix both were really great weeks for both our middle school and high school students. We ended up, as of this day, we ended up baptizing two students at Move and then two middle school students from Mix after we got back home. And so we're just seeing a lot of really cool stuff happen in the teen room resulting from the summer, but it was a lot of fun.
That's fun.
We played a lot of games. I hit my head in the racquetball room.
You shared that one.
I shared that already.
Not being able to slow down.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Head injury.
It was a head injury. But yeah, it was just a really good week, man. Our teens are on fire, making decisions, ready to go do some kingdom work. So
that's great.
I want to say thank you to all of you for praying and for supporting. It was we saw some answered prayers, lots of answered prayers.
That's awesome.
We got one more camp, I guess. The 3rd through 5th grade leaves tomorrow as we record today, Thursday. Yeah. Yeah. So 32, I think, was the number of students, and then another 15, I think, adults.
Sounds right.
So 40, close to 50 people out of Woodland. So we're excited about that too. But Adam, check in past couple of weeks?
Check in past couple of weeks. Been nothing eventful really going on.
What's your best every plate meal?
Best every plate meal since
I'm the only one at this table not every plate.
I don't know. We've done it off and on for a little over a year or so.
Okay.
I'm telling you, those Korean barbecue tacos are pretty good.
Yeah.
And here's what's great about it. So I'm not like trying. If anybody needs a code, they can.
This is not a paid advertisement.
You're about to save Adam about $20 a box.
No. But one of the things that was really cool is you do it long enough and you keep those recipe cards. Then what you're able to do is you are able to just say, we're just going to go to the store and buy the stuff for this.
Yep.
And so it kind of expands your palate and your repertoire.
Yeah.
Your abilities.
French word. I don't know.
Correct. Yes.
It's been a good week. Got a chance to go see the new Mission Impossible movie last night. So that was great.
Tom Cruise flying off a cliff on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
The two most recent movies have involved an actor that's way too old playing another part in a movie that's way outdone.
So
in Mission Impossible and in
Indiana Jones. I haven't seen Mission Impossible, but I think the Indiana Jones they did a great job of keeping it like Harrison Ford's
age appropriate. Yeah,
and I haven't seen Mission Impossible. Adam can comment on that, but I did watch a 10-minute YouTube video of him training to do this motorcycle jump off a cliff to then base jump.
Yeah, dude's insane.
And the guy like rode so many motorcycles off of a cliff just practicing. Like he trained, he did all his own stunts. So
he's insane.
I mean, I'm not on a Tom Cruise bandwagon necessarily, but he trained well. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether you're on the bandwagon or not, you have to admit that that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
I was locked in for 10 minutes on that YouTube video.
He's a lunatic. He is a lunatic.
He's crazy.
And it's impressive. And I think that even as he gets older, like they do things even in this one to just kind of show you that Ethan Hunt's getting a little older and those kind of things. So it's a good movie. Good movie. It's only part one though. So
it's only part one.
Don't go in thinking you're going to get
There's another Mission Impossible.
Well, it's what? Dead Reckoning?
Dead Reckoning
part one.
I mean, by now, shouldn't the series actually be called Mission Improbable? Because he always actually achieves the mission.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
But if it was impossible, he probably wouldn't have had like 7 or 8 successful movies by now.
Yeah,
you know,
it's that good.
Is that good?
Mission, it's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
It's been a good 2 weeks for us. We made it to Kansas and back for the surprise party safely. Lots of fun. My best meal was probably Monday night. Sasha and I went to Athens on a date night. Just had a nice meal there, and then actually ate. We went over to Last Resort for dessert. So if you've never been to Last Resort Grill. Had a nice piece of cake, and she had some cheesecake that was good, some coffees after dinner. So that was good.
What restaurant did you eat at? Did I miss that?
I'm blanking on the name of it. We were going to go there's a British like pub. It's called the Royal Peasant, and we've been several times before. It's really good. But they were we showed up in the parking lot, and then like no one's there. Chairs are stacked, and then I read the sign on the door that said, "Hey, we're closed from July 3rd to 11th for like vacation and cleaning or something like that." So we missed out on that. So we just went to another kind of pub and got some British food, fish and chips. So
nice,
like that a lot. Yeah. Man, I guess we should talk about the sermon a little bit. This week, we're going to the roof or the roof. How do you say it?
Roof.
Roof. The roof is on fire.
Roof.
The roof.
Raise the roof.
Raise the roof. Yep.
Raise it. Okay,
the
so
red,
do you...
The red roof in.
Do you like roofs? Do you like being on roofs?
I do not like roofing.
Right.
Yeah, roofing is bad.
That was what I was greeted with. So I went to Joplin. Freshman year, and then came home for Thanksgiving break. My dad said, "Hey, get ready because on Christmas break we're redoing the roof." Ooh. So I went back up, took my finals, came back home, and all Christmas break, man, it took us a long time. We did the roof on our own. We had
shingles,
to shingles. Too soon. We had to repair some boards and stuff like that, and it was tedious. It was tedious. It was terrible.
Yeah. The last time I was on my roof, my shoulder dislocated, so that was fun. I was stuck on the roof with that.
How many sentences can you end
like
with that?
Seven. It's so stupid.
This my
but
shoulder
it hasn't
dislocated.
Been a long time, and I've been more careful when I've done workout things, and just the last time was when we played frisbee, and somebody hit it.
Yep.
So anyway,
ultimate frisbee. I hope
ultimate frisbee.
Oh, ultimate frisbee. Okay. Yeah, not just throwing
that. That is playing ultimate frisbee out on the field next to the church has a. It's taken some people out. So I played a game. Josh's shoulder done. Game over. We played another game. Tony pulled a hamstring like 5 minutes in, and game over. You know,
ooh.
It's taken some people out.
So the roof is where I guess five people found themselves on this week. Four of them were healthy. One of them was paralyzed, and they couldn't see another way to get to Jesus, so they went to the roof. So it was a fun story. As all of them have been this summer, just looking at some popular stories we probably have heard before as we do this retold series. So, Adam, recap the story from Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how the story goes. Jesus is in, he's leading a small group and meeting in a house.
Yeah.
It's packed, it's full, four guys and hear about him there, that he's there. And so they're like, we need to get our buddy here that's on a mat. Who's paralyzed, need to get him to Jesus. So they get there, can't get in. So they dig a hole in the roof, and then they, I'm hoping, lower him down.
Just plop him.
Yeah. I mean, they could have been like, well, he's already paralyzed. I mean, what's the worst
he's
that can
happen?
He's not going to feel it. He'll be fine.
What's he going to do? Still not walk?
Yeah. So hopefully they lowered him down, and then Jesus sees their faith and forgives the guy of his sins, and then begins a nice little back and forth with the Pharisees, even though they don't really give any words to it. He just is like, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, I love that.
I know what you're thinking. And so yeah, great story.
In your study this go around, was there anything that you hadn't known before that you learned, or something that struck you again? Just what kind of popped out from this story as you read, as you studied? What kept coming to your mind?
Yeah, I've preached on this story a few times, and so it's always fun to just kind of revisit old notes and those things. And I know Luke mentions this. I don't remember. Does Matthew mention this one as well? I know Luke's got it in Luke 5, but I don't.
It's for sure in Mark.
Yeah, and it's for sure in Mark.
Since that's where
it's
we
from.
Went Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's just such a fascinating story. I think, you know, several things, and I'm sure we'll end up talking about it as we go through it, but. It's the only time in the Bible, I think, that where Jesus heals someone because of somebody else's faith. Mm. And so I think that in this story, there's just so much to talk about whenever it comes to relationships, about our attitudes toward people. And then I thought one of the things, and it ended up in the message for sure, was that how Jesus points out what the guy's real problem is. And it's not the paralysis. It's his sinfulness. And so love the story.
Luke, what's one of your favorite parts?
I I don't know. I think this is just in Mark's gospel for sure. This is probably the first little narrative story where I think Jesus publicly is kind of hinting at who he is, which I think is pretty fun. Where, you know, he's saying your sins are forgiven, and people are thinking, well, who has the authority to do that? What's easier, to say your sins are forgiven or get up and walk? All that sort of stuff. So I think that that's kind of fun, a detailed piece. I love the story of the friends. I do think it's interesting. I made a comment about this on your notes, Adam. Often, whenever you see someone in the Bible who has some sort of ailment, whether it be blindness or leprosy or paralyzation or whatever, often they're kind of isolated, where they don't really have anybody. So I think it's interesting that we have this man who's paralyzed, has been for, you know, a while, a long time. And he still has a community. And it's just got me thinking about, like, what was, I don't know, just the imagination. What was this man like?
Right.
To have been paralyzed, but still have had four friends supporting him. He must have been just an incredible dude, you know, or really funny that people wanted to stay around him, you know. But I think that that's just an interesting note that I always kind of scribble down with the story, is that this dude had friends, and that actually is kind of rare,
right,
considering the time and the in the history. People like that wouldn't have had friends.
I don't know that there's a clue that we have of how old he is or how long he's been paralyzed. It's just kind of up to our imagination. So,
right.
So
it's in Matthew 9. And if I'm reading this, I'm just scanning through it again. Okay, yeah. So Matthew doesn't mention the roof at all. It's only Mark and Luke that do. So
yeah, talk about the roof a little bit for anybody who might not know. What were they digging through? Because it wasn't the shingles that you know, Luke laid.
Right. Wasn't asphalt.
San Antonio. Wasn't asphalt. It. So what was the roof like?
So you're probably talking about wooden beams that are covered with straw, clay, manure, those kind of things. And then whenever the rain would come down, the clay would absorb the water, which would make it seal it. And then they would probably top it with grass or something like that. And so it's a dirt type of roof.
Right.
And so, I mean, it would take some effort to get through it.
Still a roof.
It's still a roof.
But they didn't need their power tools.
No. They didn't have a circular saw.
They didn't need to make three or four trips to Home Depot to accomplish the project.
Yeah. It's like, oh man, I got the wrong blade.
Yeah.
Oh man. So that's what we're talking about on that. And so, it makes for a rather dramatic scene in our minds, because, you know, Jesus is teaching, and then all of a sudden, like, just a first clump of dirt falls down, or maybe you hear the footsteps on it. I don't know how it would all work.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's probably some annoyed person in the back going, oh my gosh, what is going on here? I mean, trying to listen to Jesus teach and somebody's up on the roof. I mean,
I mean, that's just fun to put yourself in the house where Jesus is teaching. Is like, as soon as there is one disruption, does he just stop and like wait 15 minutes for them to get through the roof?
Yeah, and
it's like this awkward thing. Like, what's going on? What's going on? You know?
Y'all, give me just a second. Yeah. Let's get this just a second. Then we'll keep teaching.
Or does he try to do what I do, which is to just like, you know, for the first 5 minutes, at least just like talk over the distractions and be like, nothing's going on, you know, whatever. I don't know. It's just fun to think about.
Yeah. Like I remember one time I was preaching, this was years ago. Somebody brought in a seeing eye dog, and nobody saw this big German Shepherd come in, but there were just a few of us that saw it. And so I'm up there preaching, and it happened to be a Sunday where it was raining and some thunder struck outside. And you could hear it in the room, and that dog started barking. And you want to talk about just a little bit of a distraction. Yeah, people were like, just everybody's eyes are up looking. And so I did what you just said. I just kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, just keep rolling, man.
Houses would have been close together as well. So some people think they just climbed on the neighbor's house and then were able to step over pretty quickly.
So like Mission Impossible, where you're just jumping from
roof
to roof.
Once again. It happened, so is it impossible?
Or like Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones. You know.
Jason Bourne.
Now that we know it,
Jason Bourne.
Now that we know it annoys Luke, I think we just need to like Mission Impossible. And
I mean, they're good movies. They're entertaining.
Indiana Jones, all the more.
All of those movies are what I call popcorn movies, in which you can watch them over and over again with a thing of popcorn and all that sort of stuff. But
what's wrong with that?
They're not the best movies ever.
So what's the best movie ever?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, see? Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Coming from a guy that likes Hot Rod.
Yeah.
Hot Rod, that's not the best movie ever. That's just a totally, you can't even throw that into the category of movie. That's just a good time, right?
Are you
there.
One of those movie snobs that would say Citizen Kane is the best movie
no,
of all time?
No, it is a good movie. It is a good movie, though.
You know?
Yeah.
What was the name of the sled?
Rosebud.
Rosebud, that's it. Yeah. Okay, just ruined it.
Oh, yeah, spoiler alert. But it is in black and white, so if you haven't seen it yet.
Right.
Yeah, and he was dead the whole time in Sixth Sense.
Yep.
It's a hard one to say. Okay, back to this story. Anything else just before, I know we got to move into application and trying to put legs to it and things like that, but just from the text itself, what do you guys see that sticks out? Any interesting just study notes? Anything else to add there, Adam?
No, I think as we walk through it, we'll hit all the big ones.
Well, so let's jump into some application then. Love these 3 points. They were all kind of different, really.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like three aspects of one thing. It was just three very different applications. So First one, God uses human relationships to grow our faith. Love that. Obviously, these friends get their buddy to Jesus, and so God does the same thing for us with people in our lives getting us to Jesus. Add anything else you want to, but a couple of things that struck me. One of them was just, you can't be in a hurry. One of the lines you said was, you can't hurry to listen. You can't hurry discipleship. You can't hurry relationship. So what helps you guys slow down to have unhurried community?
Unhurried relationships. Yeah. I think one of the things that I have to do, because this isn't like a strong suit for me, is I have to just be hyper intentional. So I've got a couple of groups of guys that I meet with. And so we just have to make sure that it's on the calendar every month that we're going to sit down and have an unhurried conversation. It's trying to...
So it's kind of getting ahead of it on the schedule. So putting it there and not saying,
If you don't write it,
it might happen.
Yeah, if you don't write it in pencil, you'll never write it in ink kind of thing. I think the other thing is and I'm terrible at this, but trying to take advantage of interruptions.
Okay.
To where somebody will call or text and like, hey, do you got some time to chat? And even if I don't right there in the moment, I can just being like, give me 30 minutes or, you know, something of that nature. Because I think just having being able to have an unhurried conversation is just is always a good thing.
It's a skill not many have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luke, what about you?
I agree a lot. For me, community, unhurried community happens best whenever it is a regular rhythm. Mm-hmm. It's on the calendar. So I'll tell this story, right? So like, you know how Apple Maps track your every move, right? So on Monday nights, whether I'm going there or not,
there you go.
On Monday nights, every Monday night, my Apple Maps gives me a notification and says 6 minutes to, and then Josh's house, because that's where we group up for small group. And so even just like, Apple knows Monday nights is the rhythm that's blocked out for community. And I think interruptions too. So like whenever a group of people say, hey, you know, what are you doing? Like, you know, make some room. Let's play pickleball. Let's play disc golf. Let's go do something. And for me, I really love shared activity. And so for me, shared activity actually ends up being a lot of the unhurried community. Some of the best conversations I've ever had are, you know, after 2 hours of sweating in pickleball or an hour and a half of going to play a round of disc golf. And so I think just making room in your schedule as well for the interruptions, right? So, you know, I'm on Thursday, I'm not going to have anything on my calendar for the evening. So that my wife and I can go do something together, or if someone hits us up and we want to go out and do something together, that we can do that. And I want to get better at that. So hit me up Thursday evenings. Let's play something. You know,
props to thinking back over the past couple of weeks. One highlight we failed to mention a while ago was just Tuesday night with the cornhole. We had props to you guys. 90 something I think came out and just had a great time. It was unhurried because I think we started at 6-ish, and the last people didn't
10:30
leave till like 10:30, because that's how long the
tournament took.
Champions took to win the double dip. They came back and beat the out of the.
Are you surprised at who won?
Jason King and Rick Britt, yeah. man. Rick, and I was
pleasantly surprised.
I was.
I'm so glad that they did.
J Money Johnson, as some people call Jason, and Rick.
Some people or just you?
No, I didn't make that up. I didn't make that up, hilarious. But I call him that now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was giving him a hard time. Rick, I only play twice a year, Britt. That's what he said. That's right. What he said. My point is, Tuesday night, there were several conversations I had with guys, and they had with each other that wouldn't have happened, but they were just there hanging out for a couple hours. Guys that I hadn't talked to in a while, guys I hadn't met before, and one person even texted me later that night and said, that was the most fun I've ever had getting killed in cornhole.
I love it.
So it was great.
One thing that was just interesting about that night and talking about the unhurriedness of relationships is as I was walking around and talking to people and playing cornhole and nine square, one of the things that I thought was interesting is I did not see a single face in a phone.
True. Right.
Yeah. There was not a single face that was
only
in a phone
hours
or on a screen.
The few times that we took pictures.
Right. Yeah. And it was just really, really meaningful, casual community where there were no distractions. It was just we're here with each other. And I think that's just another note to keep in mind is like unhurried community is hard, but having community while you're buried in a screen is also really hard. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that was so cool on Tuesday night whenever, you know, you got 90 to 100 dudes out there and not a single one of them is on their phone. They're just enjoying
cool.
each other.
It's a lot of fun.
One of the things that I saw, and I'm trying to find the actual number, but you know, you talk about Gen Z and loneliness and those things. One of the major contributors is the smartphone and screen, smartphone. Did I say foreign?
Smartphone.
The smartphone and their screens. But anyway, it was like something along the lines of, and I can't find the exact statistic right now, but it was like, 73% of people who say they are heavy social media users are lonely compared to like it was like 52% of those who say they're just moderate users. Mm-hmm. And so, the more you are on your screen, the more lonely you'll be.
Yeah, I remember one stat you've shared before was just there was pretty much a direct correlation. The more you were on Facebook, the less you were basically satisfied with life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's kind of my take on it. It wasn't those exact words, but just, and there's nothing wrong with, we use Facebook for church stuff. We use Facebook to connect with each other, but just remembering that it is a tool and how quickly we can get, you know, sucked into things. So anyway, soapbox time over.
Yep.
Here's a line I loved. You said their faith leads to his faith.
Yeah.
So just a great line. How have you seen that happen in your life from someone's faith leading to your faith?
Well, so if you stop and you think about the things that actually help us grow our faith, if you made a list, you would say it's things like good teaching, so practical teaching, not just like information, but this is how you apply this. You would say it's the private disciplines, rhythms that we have in our lives. You would say it's the personal ministry that we do. You know, we go out and we minister to others. And then another one we'd say is just like, well, it was a pivotal circumstance, something major happened in my life. And God got my attention. So, but then there's the fifth thing is that there are just these like almost providential, God-given relationships that help stimulate our faith and grow our faith. Because I don't know of anybody, and I'm sure there's somebody out there. So let's just say the odds are very, very low that there's anybody out there that would say, you know, whenever it comes to my faith in Jesus, my relationship with God, I would like to thank me, you know, because it's all me, you know, I'm the one that brought myself to this place, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Every single one of us would go, I'd like to thank, you know, my mom, or I'd like to thank my dad or my grandparents, or, you know, there was this guy at school who invited me to youth group one day, and I had no idea that it was going to be this pivotal moment in my life. And so that I'd like to thank him. Or, you know, there was this preacher that came and saw me, or blah, 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 whatever it is. There's almost always somebody else that's always going to lead us to that place. And I know that's true in my life. You know, I think of, you know, my parents, my grandparents. I think of my buddies in high school who helped get me back into faith. I think about the people who surround me now. Even now, I've been a Christian for I don't even know how long. And there are people who are continually just pouring themselves into me relationally. And so their faith is helping to grow. My faith. That's just the way it goes.
It's funny to think through. We're sitting in the you know, converted classroom studio at the church where we film a lot of the baptism testimonies. Mm-hmm. And the last question we always ask anybody is just, who would you like to thank and tell us why? And that is every single time the easiest question for them to answer.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I don't know that there's ever been a time when somebody's gone.
Yeah. I don't think I have anybody.
There's always somebody.
And that's true for me too. You know, you throw out all of these, it's small group leaders in my life. It's a youth minister. It's my parents. It's my family. It's the people that I shared a floor with in college. It's it's the community that I'm in now here in Georgia. And it's just so, it's so crucial. This is another soapbox, you know, thing that I scribbled off into your notes here, Adam, was I'm so tired of people giving the excuse, well, it's my personal relationship with Jesus. He's my personal Lord and Savior. And it's like, okay, but also you can't use that as an excuse for an individualistic faith because that doesn't exist.
Right.
And so that's just one line
that's been helpful that I've heard before is, it's personal, but it's not private.
Right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
Obviously you have to know Jesus yourself. You can't, you know, live on someone else's faith. It is a personal connection, but it's never meant to be private.
Exactly.
Right.
Cool. I've had many as well. Parents jump to mind, and even just the heritage of grandparents and extended family, things like that. I go back to the college dorms as well, or some of the professors in college, things like that. Many, many people. And it's kind of fun to think too, not in a prideful way, but just who are you? Who is that for you? Like whose faith is happening because of you? And it, you know, puts some good pressure as a parent or as like a youth minister. You want to pour into people as a senior minister. You're preaching every week. And it's cool to see what God does just through faithfulness. I love, Adam, you said the young guy probably had tattoos and earrings and all that stuff.
That was funny, he had
the crazy idea. Yeah. And so it's just a reminder that you don't have to have a perfect put together life. You just got to care enough about a friend to get him a Jesus somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And aren't you thankful someone has done that for you as well? So anything else on human relationships?
I think that the rubber to the road kind of thing is that since we are more isolated than ever because of, you know, the ease of technology, social media, all the things that on add into it, that means we have to be even more intentional of putting ourselves into situations where relationships can grow.
Yeah, so let's workshop that just a little bit.
Yeah.
What are a few ideas off the top of your head? How can you put yourself in those spots?
Start serving. I mean, whenever you're serving, you're putting yourself in a group of people.
Here in Corinth, but also other places.
Yeah, so. Get into a group of some sort, whether that is a group of guys that just likes to get together and play pickleball, or it's a small group that meets on a weekly basis. But then if you're doing those two things, you're like, well, I still don't know that, you know, relationships are like going as deep or leading to better faith, then you get real with it.
Okay. It's,
are you staying in the shallow end? If you're going to stay in the shallow end, of course you're not going to experience any change or any difference. But it's whenever you, to use the old MTV show Real World, whenever you stop pretending and you stop getting real, you know, that's where life change really begins to happen. Whenever you've got two or three, four, you know, friends that you're able to say, hey, this is what's going on, and I'm really struggling, you know, or I'm really excited, and being able to share in struggles and in victories.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That kind of leads really well into the next one, because I wanted to get specific on that too. The second application point, you said our main problem is not what we think. And then I'm looking for the exact quote, but you mentioned all this trauma. Like, God, if I can just get through all this trauma, all this bad stuff going on, then I'll kind of pursue you. But I want to get specific and just think through what are some of the hurdles that most often stand in the way of realizing our greatest need is the relationship that we have with God and the community that we need and in small groups and here in worship and things. What are some of those things that kind of most commonly stand in the way?
Well, I think a lot of times it's circumstantial. And we feel like, so let's say you're struggling in your marriage and, you know, things aren't well. You guys aren't communicating anymore. You know, intimacy is just completely flown out the window. And your roommates, you're a partnership, you're a, you know, it's almost like a contractual relationship. And it's like, God, I can't, that's what I need most. That's what I need most. That's what I need most. I need this fixed. I need this fixed. I need this fixed. And it's like, I think Jesus is looking at this guy, looking at the friends too, because they look at him and they're thinking, what does this guy need more than anything? Mm-hmm. They're wrong too.
Yep.
They think, man, if he could just get up and walk, then everything would be great. And Jesus looks at the guy and really looks at the friend and really the whole, entire crowd, and he looks at us.
Yep.
He's like, no, your biggest need is you need a relationship with God as Father even more than you need a healthy marriage, even more than you need you know, rock solid finances, even more than you need for this guy to be able to get up and walk and for his friends to not have to carry him around anymore. It's like that's what you need more than anything else. And the reality of it is, because even if you get what you want, so we talk about healing. You know, we pray for people to get well, and sometimes God heals them and they do get well. But the harsh reality of it is eventually they're going to get sick again, because we all do.
Yeah.
The death rate in the United States of America continues to just like hover right at 100%.
It hovers. Sometimes it gets to 101.
Yeah, yeah.
One out of every one person.
Yeah, one out of every one person will, if the Lord doesn't come back,
we
will experience death. And so what we need most is that relationship with Him. And what we need most is to know God as a loving Father. Because if you look at it there, you notice what Jesus calls the guy. He calls him son.
He does.
You know, just a very just compassionate, just endearing term. And so it's almost like a clue that Jesus is thrown in there. It's like what you need is to see God as your Father, as somebody who loves you and cares for you, not a hard-nosed boss who's just looking out to get as much out of you as he can.
Yeah. I think that sometimes our circumstances make us zone in on the moment and forget the bigger picture. And so I'm reminded, as you're talking here, Adam, of Jesus' words in Matthew 6, Sermon on the Mount. He's talking about worrying, and I'll just read some of it because it's good. He says, "Why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow? They don't labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father," to use that word, "heavenly Father knows that you need them." But then he says, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has trouble of its own," right? So we get focused on these circumstances. It brings us into the moment thinking, this is what I need. This is what I'm worried about. I do need a better marriage. I do need a better relationship. I do need to find security in this, or I do need better rhythms or better recreation or whatever. And all of a sudden we've forgotten that what Jesus is actually asking of us is to seek him, to seek his presence. And whenever we become kingdom of God people first, experiencing a relationship with God, then all of these things get added to us. And it's not, you're not going to be able to have a better marriage just by your own efforts, but rather the efforts coming from the relationship that you have with the Father. And so you see that in this story of the paralytic. It's like, it isn't until after the relationship is encountered that the healing actually takes place. So you've got to encounter the relationship with your Father before there's healing and life spoken into any area that you're concerned about or worried about.
Yeah. So practically, what are some best practices for you all to remind yourself on a daily basis that God is a loving Father?
Well, I think that the primary one that for me is just the gratitude, the daily practice of gratitude.
Okay, love it.
You know, and say, it's just like, God, I'm grateful for, because then that's reminding me of all the things that my loving Father is you know, doing yeah. for
every. I think James says every good and perfect yeah. gift comes down from above.
Yep.
Yeah.
From the Father yeah. of heavenly lights.
So I think that's one of the big reminders for me.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. If gratitude is a part of your rhythm, then I think that you're going to understand. I think you're going to understand what it's like to experience relationship with the Father who looks to bless us whenever we're in that right there.
Mm-hmm. I read something interesting yesterday talking about the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. There's this one, you know, blessed are those who mourn. And you're like, well, what are you mourning for? Like, it's not a prescription that Jesus says you should go out and find something to mourn over, because like, then you'll be blessed. It's
right.
It's really a description, not a prescription. It's a description of people who are already mourning. They are going to be blessed in the kingdom of God, and they're mourning over the injustice of the world. They're mourning over the fact that they're sinners, but God has saved them. And so, kind of on a different side of the coin, just remembering. We're blessed when we remember kind of who we are, but also what God has done for us,
yeah.
you know? So I love that line, God may wait to give us what we want, to give us what we need.
Mm-hmm.
Great line. I just spoke with somebody a few days ago that has just had a baby recently, and they took him to the doctor, and they got the shot, and he said, man, it was just so bad because he was looking up at me,
yep.
smiling.
Yep.
And then the doctor shoved the needle in him,
yep.
and he thought, I did it. So he starts screaming.
Betrayal.
Of course, the baby won't remember that one day of his life. But, yeah, it breaks your heart because you want to give that baby what they want, but what they need is a shot. And so, anyway, what are some shots God's given you in your life?
Well, I yes. think that, like, so you know, I don't know if this is a specific one for me necessarily, but, like, I think about it in this. It's like, you know, so somebody's like, I don't want to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just want to be happy again. And what God may do is he may say, okay, what you need more than just to be happy is to be assured of my presence.
Yeah.
To know that I'm always mm-hmm. with you. And so he may allow you to go through a season to where you're learning, wait, God is with me. God is mm-hmm. is present with me in all my troubles and all my struggles. He's right here. And he may give that to you.
Mm-hmm.
He may give you his presence before he gives you the joy.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah.
And so I think that that's like just an example of, okay, I think I need this.
Mm-hmm.
But God knows what I truly need. And so he's going to give me that first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm thinking back just my own life. The first thing that popped into my mind, you're asking this question. I did not think that I was going to graduate Bible college single.
Okay.
You
Same.
Know,
yeah.
I went into Bible college thinking, all right,
the Ozark way, man.
Stereotypes, like this
Ring
is the way it's going to go, all that sort of yeah. stuff. You know, got further into the education and the Lord started revealing to me, it's like, you want this more than you actually want me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you're going to have to overcome that before and become content.
Yeah.
Before anything happens. And of course, turned out
pretty well
that God knew way better than I did. And, you know, that's just the first thing that pops into my mind is I wanted that so bad that I had neglected the relationship with the Father and, mm-hmm. You know, had to overcome some things and, you know, start to be content with my relationship with him. Whether or not I was ever blessed with a marriage or a wife or anything like that, was I going to be okay
yeah.
with just me and God? And
I remember
it was the moment that I was like, I had just, you know, I'd graduated, I'd moved out here and I had started to become content and I was good and I was good and I was good. And then Tristan came along. So, thank you, God
yeah.
for that. You know,
no, I remember a conversation that somebody was recounting to me to that where they were talking about, it was more just like relational loneliness.
Okay.
And like, you know, I'm just lonely. And what their mentor said to them is, well, I think what God is trying to do is to get you to a place to where you can actually say these words and mean it, that Jesus is enough.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that if I have him, I have everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have everything but not him, I have nothing.
Right.
And so
yep.
I think that's where God is giving us what we need more than what we want. Because we what we want is a full social calendar, at least extroverts. and so But what we may need may be a more intimate, deep relationship with him.
Well, I know you've read this book too, Adam, Leadership Pain. Mm-hmm. So I'm like halfway through it right now. And
fantastic book.
Yeah, so good. And it's the line, the mantra that just keeps getting repeated is, you will never grow past the threshold of your pain, basically.
Yep.
And so all throughout it, there's stories and stories and stories of people mm-hmm. saying, here's the tremendous pain I went through, but I knew God was with me.
Yep.
I mean, crazy stuff. Like a pastor in South Africa walking into his wife tied up on a bed with guns pointed at her.
Right.
Like crazy stuff. And him saying, we prayed so hard in that moment. And just insane stuff. So
yeah,
I think you get it. God may give you a low bank account, or, you know, some struggles financially, or even physically allow things to happen. And remember, what is the line you said before? We trust his heart when we can't see his hand.
Yeah. Even whenever we can't see God's hand, we trust God's heart.
Yeah. And we know that he is that loving father. So Third point was, it's impossible to love the father without sharing his heart for people. Here's the quote. The truth is, the more spiritually mature you grow, the more you will find your heart drawn to people. You want to reach out to people, especially those neglected by society or far from God. That line hit me because so often that's not true in Christian circles. It's like, oh, the more spiritually mature I get, the more Christian stuff I do, and I only listen to this music, and I'm only in Christian crowds, and there's a tension to manage. It's not like you should just leave Christian community away and only pursue the lost and things like that. So how do you manage that? How do you manage that tension? Last week you mentioned kind of the same thing with Zacchaeus.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are your thoughts?
I don't know that I, this is not like the, like managing the tension is not the issue for me. For me, the issue is like trying to find opportunities to be around non-church people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I joke about it sometimes. It's like, I know it's a surprise, but I do work only with Christians.
Yep.
Everybody that I work with is a Christian. I'm pretty confident in most of the days. And so it's not like I get to go to my workplace and I've got like non-Christians around me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is one of the reasons why I kind of like took up golf a little bit mm-hmm. to try to get me out a little bit. It hasn't been as much of a success in that as I was hoping it would be at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the struggle for a lot of Christians, though, mm-hmm. is we do just naturally end up hanging out with people that we have a lot of things in common with. Mm-hmm. That's natural.
Yeah.
That's human nature. And so what it is that we have to continue to pray. And this is why, you know, we always talk about having a one. And if you don't have a one, then it's like a daily prayer of, God, you got to send me a one, send me a one, send me a one. And because our heart has to be for people who are far from God, because what we don't want to do, what can happen, I should say, is we end up in the same position of the critic who's standing there, either grumbling at Zacchaeus being invited, Jesus inviting himself to his home, or grumbling as a critic going, who's this guy think he is, you know, doing that for this guy? I mean, I was listening to a great small group lesson and these guys dropped a guy down on, you know, onto the ground. We've been interrupted. He didn't even get on to them for interrupting, you know, and it's just easy to get into that kind of cold-hearted place. And so, our hearts need to be drawn towards people who are on the fringe.
Yeah, you see that displayed in literally what Jesus says are the two most important things, right? Is to love God and then, hey, catch this, to love people, to have a heart for people.
Mm-hmm.
This one has been really tough for me to figure out through my life. Not only did I, you know, do 4 years on the holy hill of Ozark Christian College. But like you've mentioned, now I have been here 4 years, and every day that I go to work is with people who are, you know, loving the Lord and trying to honor him with kingdom work in some capacity. And so there isn't this workplace environment that I've got. And really, even before college, like I had some friends who were non-Christian, but like I played basketball on a homeschool basketball team where the majority of everybody was Christian. I, you know, was homeschooled, never really had anything. It was church all the time. And so it wasn't until two or three years ago that I was like, oh my goodness, like I don't know anybody who's not a Christian. Like I don't have actually like have a relationship with someone who's not a Christian. And so I've had to wrestle with that. And so for me, the part of my rhythm and calendar that's blocked off every week is Saturday morning, because that's whenever I go do something fun. It's a recreation and I play in a disc golf league. But also everybody in that disc golf league are not church people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they might know God, they might have a relationship with him, they would say, but they're not active or plugged in. Some of them don't know the Lord at all. And so for me, my one is someone that I play with every single week, and mm-hmm. I've had to grow in that. I also just a couple of other like things I've tried to like, be frequent, in, different things. So like going to get a haircut, trying to get the same person every time. Trying to get the same person every time, strike up a conversation. Hey, how can I be praying for you? You know, just different mm-hmm. questions like that. Mm-hmm. Same coffee shop. Hey, you know, different things like that. Yep. So you go to these points of intersection and community over and over and over again. People get to know your face. You get to know their face, names, and then just some questions.
I had lunch with a guy. This was a couple months ago, and he did something that was really, really, really cool. And I have yet to do this, and I feel like a moron every single time I don't do it. But like, he did something so simple. So the server brought our food, and he just said, "Hey, what's your name?" Because she'd already introduced herself, and it's like, let's just say Maria. I don't remember the name. He's like, "Maria, we're about to pray for our food. Is there anything that we can be praying about for you?"
Okay, yeah,
that's great. So good.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing.
Yeah, and so I took a note mentally. It's like, man, I need to start doing that, and I still haven't done it. But I thought it was just like a fantastic way to be able to. Even you're just doing a little bit of ministry there.
Yep.
And she was able to say something. I think it was like something along the lines, something with her brother. And he's like, okay, well, that's what we'll be praying for. And some people take it even a step further. I know Jen's got a friend. And so it's a little bit more aggressive of, hey, we're about to pray for our food. Can we pray for you? And can we do it right now?
Yeah. Would you want to join us?
want to join us. And so that may be a little, I mean, hey, if you're wired that way, go for it. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're not quite wired that place or not to that place, then I think the other method is really good.
Yeah. I mean, some other ideas, would just be going to the same checkout line at Kroger or Publix or wherever you shop. Mm-hmm. And just, hitting the same places every week. I love that you said the coffee shop, if that's a rhythm for you, listening or
barbershop. Yeah.
Anything. Yeah. And just make it a note. I remember teaching middle school CLC years ago. It's not in the curriculum we do anymore, but part of what we used to teach them was listen, remember, ask, and pray. So if somebody tells you something, listen to it and then ask them about it later, or remember and then ask and then pray.
La rap.
That was terrible.
Sounds like is he from Atlanta? You know, like Lil Baby,
Lil Rap. Lil Rap.
Okay, this is so bad. We got to get off this soon because it's starting to get bad. Yes, it's impossible to love the Father without sharing His heart for people. So I'm with you guys. I have one of the things that's interesting. You know, point number one, you're talking about God uses human relationships to grow our faith. So part of what's great about my life is I have had that Christian family my whole life. I've been in church my whole life. But then it's not bad, but just what you got to be careful of is it's impossible to love the Father without sharing His heart for people. So where are you doing that? So one thing we try to do is we don't have a lot of neighbors. We live on a little cul-de-sac, but just, you know, doing what we can to not be awkward and overbearing, but just check in with our neighbors. So,
well, and I think too, something that just occurs to me here as well is part of it is, these Pharisees, teachers of the law, they didn't have anybody to bring to Jesus. They didn't bring anybody that we know of. So that's a little bit of a strike against them. But the big strike against them isn't just that they didn't bring somebody to Jesus. It's that they were grumbling. They were upset. Mm-hmm. And so part of it is that you can kind of just do a little bit of an inner test. It's like, wow. Okay. Here we go. You ready? So do I get annoyed that we're taking service time out to show baptism videos?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, golly, can we get on with this? I want to get back to singing songs and worshiping Jesus, and I'm ready to hear a message. Why are we spending 6 minutes watching these baptism videos? It's like, okay, yeah. All right, so yeah. This may be an indicator that there's something in the heart that needs a little bit of a check.
I'll throw it even a step further. Yeah. Whenever you see those videos or you hear of someone coming to Christ, do you question the genuineness of their heart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's that another happens. Thing at play where you're like, ooh, I don't know. They might not have been ready and all that sort of stuff. You start to careful, get off your high horse there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a good word, just careful.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful. Be careful.
Because a line I've used before is, you can be right while wronging the person.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, you might be right on the issue, but the way you say it or the gossip you spread because you're saying it could be wronging the person, even if you're right.
Yeah.
So.
And even if we're in a place to where, you know, maybe somebody's getting baptized a little early or some of those other things, it's like, you know what? We're going to celebrate. Because we don't know what God's going to be able to do.
The Lord has obviously done a work in their life, and the next step anyway is discipleship.
Exactly.
And so that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. All right. So bottom line, healing is found at the feet of Jesus. Mm-hmm. I like that. It kind of characterizes the whole story. Mm-hmm. Really, once the guy got to Jesus' feet, it all changed.
Yeah, and it was a physical, it was a spiritual healing,
spiritual healing,
everything. He was made whole.
Unfortunately, the Pharisees missed.
Yeah.
In that room, at least, there was other Pharisees like, you know, Nicodemus or Joseph of Arimathea is another character that kind of has, you know, some ties to some good things with Jesus.
Think about it like this. Were the Pharisees really at the feet of Jesus?
That's what I'm saying. Is
they were in front of him.
They kind of missed him that day.
Yeah, but they were definitely not at his feet.
So they didn't get healing. Yeah. So healing is found at the feet of Jesus. And the challenge is, who are you carrying and who's carrying you? So. Mm-hmm. Any added words? Just what do we mean by that? And what are some things we can challenge people to do?
No, I think that it's just hopefully fairly clear and fairly simple there of just, you know, who is it that you're carrying? Are you the type of friend that would be willing to do anything that it takes to get them to Jesus? And whenever you get there and you get them to Jesus, will Jesus look at you?
Yeah.
And see that your faith is strong enough.
That line really got me. Yeah. Will he see that your faith is strong enough?
Yeah. And then who's carrying you? Is because we all have a mat. I mean, that's, we've all got these things. And, but at the end of the day, we don't just need to carry somebody else's mat, but we need people who are willing to carry ours. You know, it's like the old line. I can't remember exactly how it all breaks down, but everybody needs a Paul, somebody who's a little further ahead along in the faith of you, who's teaching you, discipling you. Everybody needs a
Barnabas.
I almost said Barabbas.
Bernard.
Everybody needs a Barnabas, somebody who's encouraging you and leading you along. And everybody needs a Timothy, somebody that you're bringing up in the faith as well. And so who is it that is your Paul? Who's helping to carry you and that their faith is making your faith stronger?
Yeah. And so I would just add to this, once you identify those people, go do something about it. So send a text, walk across the street, invite somebody to church, talk to somebody at the checkout line, or send a thank you to somebody who's carried you this week. So
I think it's Psalm 16:3. I think it's David says, you know, the godly in the land are my true heroes. And it's like, so what makes somebody a hero in the faith? And one of the things is that there's somebody who helps carry your mat because they've been faithful for a really long time. They've got an incredible, joyful spirit. They've got a generous spirit. And so one of the challenge, like we did this in our small group right before everything ended up, and just kind of walked through that. I was like, give him a call, send him a note, give him a text.
That's wonderful.
And just tell him, thanks. You're one of my godly heroes.
I love that.
Yeah. Cool. All right. That's a wrap for that. We have been traveling all summer, right? So we've been to Kansas. To get there, we drove through Tennessee, Kentucky, Illinois, Missouri.
Are you in the process of writing a country song?
No, but we are going to talk about the country. Road trips happen in the summer. And so, you know, I took this quiz earlier and I got 9 out of 10. So it's not necessarily the hardest.
90%.
90%.
Well, a couple of them I got lucky.
That's a B+ at Ozark.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
They changed it.
They did. It's an A-.
They went soft.
It's a 10-point scale now?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Back in my day. What was it? A 6-point scale?
7. 95 to 100 was an A. 93 to 95 was an A-.
Oh, I think that was even...
I was on a 6-point scale, man, so a 93 was a B.
Yeah, because I remember I got a 70 on something. I was like, yes!
You
and it's like, wait a second, that's a D-. So.
Yeah. Okay, so some of them are going to be super easy, but let's just... And you can play along at home, too. Yeah, a little bit of landmark trivia for the USA. Maybe you're doing a road trip this summer. All right, let's start off with a super easy one. Golden Gate Bridge opened in 1937 in which U.S. city?
Oh, come on.
Chicago.
San Francisco.
There you go. All right. At the time, it was the longest suspension bridge in the world. Not anymore, I guess. Mm. All right. Which state do you find Mount Rushmore?
It was one of the Dakotas.
Yeah,
Is it? I got choices. Wyoming, Montana,
no.
North Dakota, or South Dakota?
I think it's South Dakota.
I'm going to go north just to be different.
It is south.
Okay.
And in fact, our family, after my senior year of high school, we road tripped from Missouri to every state west of the Mississippi except North Dakota, because there is nothing to see in North Dakota unless you've seen the movie Fargo and you really want to see the tree chipper. Kind of some dark,
that's dark
stuff. I mean,
all right.
Anyway. Oh, and this is funny too. Did you know it was sculpted by artist Gutzon Borglum?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know where he was fired from?
The Stone Mountain Project.
Stone Mountain. Yeah. Okay.
That's a fun story.
All right. You guys know this one. It's not even fair because we all went there. Anyway, the Arch. Where is it?
Yeah, St. Louis.
St. Louis, Missouri. All right.
Illinois.
There we go. Here we go. This is the one you might not know. The Willis Tower is one of the tallest buildings in the world. Which city? New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, or Chicago?
I think Chicago.
Yeah, it's Chicago because it's the old Sears Tower.
Willis is Sears.
Okay, Chicago, yeah.
Yep.
And if you want to know, its address is 233 Wacker Drive. I don't know if that's because there's
I think I've heard before that that building has its own zip code. That building in and of itself has its own zip code because so much mail goes there.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I feel like I've heard that, so maybe.
Graceland is the famous mansion of rock and roll legend.
Ew.
Michael Jackson.
Elvis.
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 Yes! I'm going to win.
But, all right. In what city can this famous landmark be found? Tupelo, Mississippi, Nashville, Tennessee, Los Angeles, California, or Memphis, Tennessee?
Do you know?
It's got to be Memphis.
Yeah, it's Memphis.
Yeah.
Do you know where he was born?
Yeah.
Memphis?
No. Tupelo. No.
Tupelo. And do you know... He was super poor.
Yeah.
Grew up in a two-room
banana
house.
Sandwiches.
I think it's a shotgun house is what they call it, something like that. Anyway, mm-hmm. two rooms.
Yeah. Never heard of that. It does have its own zip code, by the way.
And
here we go. Got it.
Graceland is visited by, you want to guess, how many hundreds of thousands of people each year?
I don't know, but it's about 100,000 too many.
600,000 visitors each year. Okay.
600,000 too many.
Another easy one. The Empire State Building is named after its state. Which state is that?
New York.
New York.
Yeah. Okay. It was built in 1931. Okay. Which the world's largest aquarium can be found in New York, Long Beach, California, Atlanta, Georgia, or Nashville, Tennessee?
I think it's Atlanta.
The Georgia Aquarium.
Yeah.
8.1 million gallons of water. And it was built by Home Depot founder Bernie Marcus. All right.
All right. Way to go, Bernie.
Home Depot founder?
Yeah. And it opened November.
Ian Arthur.
Nice.
It opened November 2005.
Yep. So, that was right. Whenever we...
yeah. It's fairly new.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Okay. This is the one I missed. All right. Monument Valley borders two states. In which two states can you find this spectacular valley? All right. Colorado and New Mexico. Or Arizona and New Mexico. Or...
Mm.
Arizona and Utah, or Utah and Colorado.
That one, the last one.
I think it's Utah and Colorado.
It is Arizona and Utah. I said Arizona and New Mexico.
I wasn't even fairly confident that Utah and Colorado actually bordered each other.
Yeah, these are the four corners, right?
Yeah.
The four corner states, so you can stand in four states in one.
Correct.
In there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's super fun. Okay, another super easy one because we're in Georgia. Okay, Stone Mountain, which state? We know which state that's in.
Yeah.
Georgia.
It's the largest exposed granite.
Georgia.
Okay. And then the last question here. The Devil's Tower National Monument can be found in what state? Mm. Wyoming, Montana, California, or Colorado?
Devil's Tower. Say those
states.
I don't
know.
Again.
Wyoming, Montana, California, or Colorado?
Since it's Devil's Tower, I'll just say California.
That's funny. I'm going to just wild guess Montana.
You both, sorry. It's Wyoming.
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 It's Wyoming.
Is it in Yellowstone at all, or is it on its own?
I don't know. I didn't look that part up. Here's the trivia. It was the first national monument, and it was established by Theodore Roosevelt.
Mm.
There you go. Good old Teddy.
Gotta love Teddy.
All right. That's our kind of road trip trivia. Any more travels for y'all this summer before school starts?
Take the daughter back to school in August at some point.
So which way are you going? Do you go up through Paducah, or do you go down through Arkansas?
I do not drive through Chattanooga and Nashville.
Okay.
It is.
That's awful. The only way we go, because we're going up to Kansas City and then Topeka. So
yeah.
Tell you what, last time we went through Chattanooga was about 1 a.m. That's the time to do it.
Nope.
Because it wasn't awfully busy.
Whichever route has the most Buc-ee's stops on the way, that's the route I want to go.
And Buc-ee's is super proud of itself.
Yeah.
I'm super proud of Buc-ee's. They are awesome.
You know what's funny? I won't get into this today, but I literally typed this in earlier to ChatGPT because I thought it might be fun on this podcast. Give me 10 stereotypes of people from Texas.
That's a teaser for next week.
Yeah. So
it's got to be.
Anyway, yeah. Come back for the listen. And until then, we love you. We like you. Have a great week.